And we are back. A little special after-hours session here to cover the things that I couldn't get to. I always try to make these more concise segments. And I talk too much. I get too into it. You know, So we're going to take this little special after-hours section here to hit the things that we want to hit. So, first of all, we've had talks about real estate on this show. And I've had several more talks with them, with prospective clients again, and existing clients. It's a hot topic, right? I mean, we all know what's going on in the real estate world. And I've also told you guys how, actually was talking to a new client of mine, Mark, super nice guy today. And Mark has been with us for about, 2 months maybe. And what brought this to my attention was the conversation I had with Mark today about real estate, about his house, about paying off his mortgage. I'll give you a lot of background. This is a show about risk management. And so I was joking to Mark. I was like, look, and he was asking about performance and he was assuring me that, you know, Zach, I've only been with you 2 months. I'm not expecting you to be up like 10% or anything, but you know, I just want to, you know, you guys, I'm new with you and want to understand how it works. And I said, look, I know you don't have unrealistic expectations. And he kind of paused and I went, if you're a client of ours, there's been a couple exceptions. And I'm actually going to talk about some of those exceptions in this segment, or I guess we're not going to do segments because we're just talking here off the cuff. We've had a couple clients who were very unrealistic. And truthfully, looking back on it, I probably had signs that they were unrealistic and I probably should have headed it off at the pass or just told them they weren't a good fit. But you're going to run into that. And I said, look, getting back to the conversation I had with my client, I said, look, I know you don't have unrealistic expectations. And one of the reasons I know you don't is because you're a client of ours. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, look, we're on the radio talking about risk management constantly. We're on the radio talking about how to lower your fees and how to take your bond portfolio, make it safer and have it average 5 to 6% a year versus the 1 to 2 you're currently making, right? We're not on the radio telling people about the next short squeeze in AMC. We're not on the radio promising people that we're smarter than everybody else and we've got a secret formula that makes 30% a year. And guys, that's another one I'm going to throw into the Dunning-Kruger effect. Just saw a story about a Ponzi scheme that got busted up where people were saying that they had an artificial intelligence program that was guaranteed to make 30% a year. Okay, please don't ever invest in anything like that. Okay, nobody can guarantee 30% returns. Nobody can guarantee 10% returns. If you want a really good metric, look at the 10-year and 30-year U.S. Treasury. Okay, right now I think they're trading like between, you know, 1.25. The 10-year is yielding 1.25%. The 30-year is yielding right around 2, I think. Could be a little off. If you're looking at a guarantee that is double the 30-year Treasury, there are times where I'm sure that's been possible. But in general, that's where your skepticism should kick in. So if the 30-year Treasury is paying 2% and somebody's saying guaranteed 6, a guaranteed 6, I guarantee you they're lying. If they offer guaranteed 30, I know they're lying. If they offer guaranteed 12, I know they're lying. Okay, there is no exception, guys. And here's how you know. If there were guaranteed plays that made that much money, you'd never hear about them because Wall Street wouldn't give you access. They wouldn't give you access. They'd take advantage of it on their own. Okay, so you got to know that. And I know that the people that call in on this show, they're not like that. They're responding to risk management, not promises of greater returns. Now, like I said, have we produced better returns? Yes. Do I think we will continue to? I hope so. But what's the one guarantee I give clients? We're not going to blow you up. And that is something that we have unique control over. Right? And I believe, and this is what we've experienced, this is what I've lived, that if we do that and we do that successfully, we'll generate better returns. So you guys know that whole story. So I was explaining that to Mark, that our average client has between, you know, a net worth between $1.5 to $6 million, a lot of self-employed folks, a lot that aren't too. And typically they have their house paid off and they got a lot of money, which isn't surprising because, again, they're responding to risk management, right? So they're probably pretty responsible people. And Mark very much fits in this demographic. So anyway, we were having a conversation about mortgages and what he should do. And he goes, you know, my goal is to have this thing paid off. And he owns, like, you know, like it's like 30% debt to equity. So it's, can't remember exactly what the numbers were, but let's say it was a $1 million house. He owed like $330,000 or something like that. So he's got a big chunk of equity. And I said to him, I go, okay, I'm going to have the same conversation with you. I go, what are you financed at? And I think he had a 15-year at like 2.2 or something like that, 2.5 maybe. And Mark, if I'm messing that up, forgive me. And I said to him, I go, look, this is the one thing that I disagree with Dave Ramsey on. And let me just say right out of the gate that if you buy into Dave Ramsey's approach and you follow it to the letter, what he is saying is correct. You will be financially free. You can't not. Okay, but now I always hesitate to bring this up. And this is one of the reasons why I want to talk about this in the after-hours session, so it's not on the air. And the reason I say that is because I don't want to give people a green light to do something irresponsible. So what I mean by that is I want a paid off house. We don't owe a lot on our house. I think it's like 40 or 50% debt to equity or something like that. But it's the only debt that my wife and I have. And I'd love to pay it off, but I'm not going to. And here's why. My house is financed at 2.75. Okay. Why in the world would I take that money and pay off a loan that cost me 2.75 when I can stick it into a risk-free annuity and average 5 to 6. Remember, the annuity's got no expense and no risk of loss. Worst case scenarios, the money sits there in the annuity and doesn't make quite 5 to 6. Makes maybe it does the worst it's ever done and does 3 to 4. Well, at the end of 10 years, that annuity has still made a lot more money than the loan cost me, and I can take the gains from the annuity and pay off the remaining balance of the house. More importantly, that real estate fund we use that is globally diversified, that is way less volatile than the price of your home, is paying a 7% distribution. And it's invested in real estate, which means it's going to be highly correlated to the price of your house. So you can take that money that you were going to use to pay off your mortgage at 2.5%, stick it into the diversified, globally diversified, meaning it's less volatile. It's held up beautifully during the financial crisis, this fund we use. It was down 4% last March, finished last year with a 3% gain. You could take that money instead, stick it into the real estate fund. It's invested in real estate, just like the money in your house, and get a 7% distribution off that. Take the 7% distribution off your money and use it to pay off your house. Let the asset pay off the other asset. Now, here's why I say I'm hesitant to say this on the air. Because I know that there are people out there that are not in a position to make that move and that won't pay off their house. And rather than investing that money at a higher rate of interest, will invest it, A, in something stupid and really risky and end up losing the money. So they'll lose the money and still owe all that money on the house, right? Or they'll just take the money and spend it. And like I said, if you're making the wrong decision with your money that results in you having a paid off house, right, that's a pretty good wrong decision. So I'm not saying don't follow the Dave Ramsey plan. But I'm saying if you're a very responsible person, and you know that by looking at your own finances, your credit score, the amount of money you have saved, the amount of money you have sitting in save. If you're looking with if the scales have fallen from your eyes and you're really trying to get down to the truth of it, you can look at your own financial situation and figure out if you're responsible pretty quick. And if you are responsible, I hate debt. But how in the world? If you think about it, you think about it as paying a debt off, but one thing we encourage all of our clients to do is think about themselves as a business. Okay, if we were running a business and we had a $500,000 loan that cost us 2.5% a year, and some good things that happened in the business, and we had $1 million of cash sitting there that we really didn't have a purpose for, that was just sitting on the balance sheet, and somebody goes, hey, let's take half of that cash and pay that debt off. And then the CFO of the company steps in and goes, well, hold on a second. That debt's at 2.5%. We can stick that money over here in a highly correlated asset like that real estate fund, and we can make 7%. That gives us a 4.5% a year positive carry. We can use that excess 4.5% a year to pay off the remainder of that debt. And so at any given time, here's the advantage. We've got both assets, right? We still own the home and we still have the cash. So at any time, the reason we don't want debt is because when disaster strikes, we don't hang it over our head. Well, if we have an equal or greater amount of cash on our balance sheet as our debt, and we're looking at you like a business, you don't have any debt. If you owe $500,000 and you've got $700,000 in cash, you have no net debt. Now, would we like that debt to be gone? Sure. I mean, we wouldn't have to pay the debt expense on it. But the question, we're going to go pay off a loan that costs us 2.5, as opposed to stick the money in an asset that's actually safer and less volatile, that's paying 7. Why would we do that? Here's the other thing. Here's why Dave Ramsey was so right for so long. You know, back when you got a mortgage now that was costing 6.5-7% a year, that's a totally different ballgame, because paying off your house now is like buying an investment that pays a guaranteed 7% a year. That starts making sense. Now, obviously, it makes a whole lot more sense when you're at 8, 9, 10% mortgage rates. Right? So he's dead on the money then. But when the mortgage costs you 2.5%, keep both. And if you want to know how to do that, guys, call us. We do this all the time. We've got clients that have $25 million real estate portfolios that they're converting over time to maximize tax advantages. And we can walk you through how we do that. And then they still like real estate. They've made $25 million off it. It's been a really successful investment for them. So they're migrating their money over to the real estate fund. It's produced the same level of gains that their real estate properties have, but with none of the headache. They don't have to manage the portfolios. They're not getting called at night because the plumbing's leaking. Right? They're globally diversified, so they're not taking concentrated regional risk. It makes all the sense in the world. And so if you're sitting there with a pile of money and you're contemplating paying your mortgage off, call us. Because maybe it's the right thing to do. It could be the right thing to do. But I just wanted to interject that. Here's the other thing we do. We think outside the box. One of the things that me and Mark talked about, that client who I've been referencing, is about reverse mortgages. And we're going to get into this right next, and this kind of be our segue into it. But when we're picking an advisor or a money manager, in my opinion, there's two ways to look at it. Now, in general, I'm assuming that they have a level of competence that we're able to see somehow or observe, right? And proof of competence would be something like this radio show. You can go back and listen to 6 years of radio shows and, you know, see what you think of what I had to say. Did I, you know, we were telling people to get the heck out of Boeing in March of 2019. Was that a good call? Go back and look at the charts, right? We all know what happened last March. Go back and listen to the radio shows from last January and February. Did we see that coming? Were we talking about it? Usually with anybody, there's some type of track record to go look at, right? And if there isn't, not saying they can't be good. When I first started in this industry, I didn't have a track record, and I thank God for the clients that took a flyer on me. But so assuming that it's assuming this person's competent, assuming we can verify their competence and their ability, that they know what they're doing. The next thing that you should be looking at really is, what are you looking for? Are you an investor that is hunting performance and chasing performance? And if so, again, if you're unvarnished or if you're intellectually honest, you'll take an unvarnished look at yourself. A really quick way you can tell that is, what would you do if you were invested for a 6-month period of time and the market was up 15% and you were up 3? If over a 6-month period of time, that would make you want to leave that person, you are a performance chaser. It's not necessarily a bad thing. There are performance chasers that made good money. I'm just saying, be honest with yourself. Now, the flip side, obviously, there are extremes. If you've got a retirement portfolio that's down 20% when the market's up 20 or 30, that's a problem. Okay, something's being done incorrectly, certainly for a retirement portfolio. Okay, now, I've seen really good hedge funds that have runs like that. There's a guy I know that ran a hedge fund that was an incredible investor, had great returns. 1 year, he was down 50% when the market was up 13. Now, the next year, he was up 350. Okay, so he wasn't managing retirement money. That was a hedge fund. Okay, but what you really need to figure out is, what's the most important to you? Are you a performance chaser, or are you looking to work with somebody where you have a marriage and philosophy, that they see things correctly? Now, obviously, I'm biased, but I think that looking at things through the philosophy, that's the most important part. Because whoever is managing your money, including whether it's me, we're going to have hot times and we're going to have cold times. What matters is the philosophy. Because even if they're not performing over a period of time, you can look at the portfolio and you can go, that's okay. I understand what they're doing. They're playing it cautious because your philosophies align. Okay? The other reason why that's important is because some of the ancillary benefits we offer our clients. We think outside the box. Why do we think outside the box? Because there's a lot of money outside the box. Right? Think about how much money we've put. Over the last 10 years, we've put something like $150 to $200 million of clients' bond money into annuities. Do you know how much that, if you looked at that whole pot of $150 to $200 million, it's probably generated something like $15 to $20 million, or probably more than that, probably like $30 to $40 million of excess returns versus had that same amount of money been parked in bonds over the same period of time. That's a lot of money. Right? And when we can find little things like that to improve the performance and decrease your risk, that's like finding gold, right? We're taking less risk. We're making more money. We're getting more bang for our buck. And right along with that goes with the use of reverse mortgages. Yes, I said the word reverse mortgages. If you guys haven't caught up on something, I am more than willing to bring up topics that are considered that are considered no-gos in this industry, right? If you want to turn a lot of people off, tell them you're going to do a talk on the virtues of annuities and reverse mortgages. Right? Typically, 80 to 90% of the people will walk out of the room immediately. And therein lies the opportunity. What do I mean by reverse mortgages? We've had a couple clients that could use a reverse mortgage and need it. The other thing, guys, and if you're listening to the show for a long time, you're probably mentally flexible because we all know the toxicity surrounding the word annuity, and yet you haven't turned me off for talking about it, okay? So I want you to be just as open to the word reverse mortgage. I, just like the annuity, I used to be anti-reverse mortgage because I didn't understand them. I also didn't understand how they change and how they become federally insured for the most part. But we have several clients, typically higher net worth, that own their house outright, that don't need any money, and we take a reverse mortgage out on their house. Why? Well, first of all, they don't actually take the money. Okay? It's like a line of credit on your house. And if you leave it sitting there and you never touch it, you don't owe anything. You can close it at any time. I'm certain there are certain guidelines you got to adhere to, but you can close it at any time and you don't owe anything. If you took a reverse mortgage out on your house, and let's say you died 10 years later, but you never took the money out, reverse mortgage just goes poof, just goes away. Your house still doesn't, you still owe the house free and clear. Okay, but why do we do that? Because we have a lot of clients, especially on the high net worth side of it, or higher, that have a lot of equity in their homes. And that equity in their home is, right, it can go away. We all saw that in 08, 09. So how do we insure equity in a home? Well, you can do it by using a reverse mortgage, assuming you meet the criteria. And let me explain how. Let's say you have a paid off $1 million house. Okay. And let's say on that house, we take out a $500,000 reverse mortgage. Typically you can lend any, you can borrow anywhere from 35 to 50% of your house's value. So let's say we take out a $500,000 reverse mortgage and we don't touch it. Okay. Then we go through an 08 or 09 type scenario and our house loses 50% of its value. At that moment, we access the money out of the reverse mortgage, that $500,000, and we go pay cash for a house of similar size, right? It's a similar comp, $500,000 house. Because our house was $1 million, it's now worth $500,000 because the economy collapsed and went through another, you know, real estate crisis or whatever the case may be. But the point is then we take that reverse mortgage, we go out and buy a house cash. How much? Right, how much house do we own? How much real estate do we own? $1 million. Right? Remember, we started with the house that was worth $1 million and the house dropped 50% value, but we still have $1 million. And then you can take that money from that reverse mortgage, go pay cash for that other house, rent the sucker out, and have that rent pay the reverse mortgage off your place. Or don't. You could live off the rent because you never have to pay as long as you and your spouse, either or. So both of you or one of you is living in that home, you never have to pay a dime of the reverse mortgage back. Now, a lot of people don't want to do the reverse mortgage because they're like, we want to leave the kids the house. We want that to be part of the estate. Well, remember, you took that money and you bought a similar house, $500,000 house. So even though when you pass away, like if you passed away then and let's say you owed $550,000 on the reverse mortgage, and the house was still only worth $500,000 because they hadn't bounced back and you passed away, your kids actually have the right to purchase that home that had the reverse mortgage on it for 95% of the assessed value. Okay, so you owe $550,000 on the mortgage, but your kids can buy the house for $475,000. And that other $75,000 in debt just gets wiped off. It's insured by the federal government. But more importantly, you don't have to leave them that house. They could just pass on that house. They inherit the other house that you bought with the reverse mortgage, free and clear. Right? So that's something that we call a force multiplier. In the military, we talk about force multipliers. The machine gun is an example of a force multiplier. When the machine gun came out, right, one guy could do the work that previously, you know, could lay down the amount of shells and rounds that previously it took 10 or 20 guys to. Right? That's a force multiplier. Why do we call the reverse mortgage a force multiplier? Because when you do it, like I just said, it costs you nothing. And what it does is it takes that asset that's worth $1 million in that case and makes it really worth $1.5 million at present day value. And it risks you nothing because they're federally insured. And that's an example of our philosophy, meaning we're always scratching below the surface, trying to figure out creative ways to lower our clients' risk, but deliver force multipliers. Not just how do we get the best returns on their money, but how do we stretch it the most? How do we turn it into the most amount of money while providing them the maximum retirement lifestyle? And that's why I said there's two ways to look at this. You can go after the performance or you can go after the philosophy. What I'm telling you is I don't care who you invest with, the performance will come and go. The philosophy won't. If you're picking somebody to manage your money or you're picking a financial advisor, pay more attention to the philosophy. And if the philosophy is simple, buy this and hold it, and we'll talk every 3 months, don't. Don't do it. You're not getting any value for your money. You're not getting any force multipliers. The fees that you're going to be paying them, they should get you more. They should get you the type of strategies I just laid out. They should be thinking outside of stocks and bonds. The focus should be on How do I do the best for this client with the money that we have? How do I lower their risk, enhance their lifestyle, let them do everything they want to do while reducing their risk and giving them more options? I mean, think about it. If it didn't cost you anything and you didn't have to take the line of credit, and you didn't have to take it. Here's the other thing. When you do that with a reverse mortgage and you don't pull the money, you just let it sit there, that line of credit grows every single year by a guaranteed amount. So that potential amount of money you tap into is getting larger and larger and larger. And yet, remember, it's never increasing the liability to you or to your investors, because no matter, let's say that line of credit got to $1 million, right? Your kids still have the right when you pass away to buy your house at 95% of assessed value. So let's say your house dropped from $1 million all the way down to $400,000. You had the reverse mortgage for 20 years. And by the time you passed away, your house is worth $400,000, but you took out a $500,000 reverse mortgage, and that amount now you owe is $1.3 million. Your kids would still have the right to buy your house at the assessed value of 495% of $400,000, which is, what is that? Would that be $380,000? My math is fuzzy today. So you'd be $380,000, right? Now, remember I said, you took the $500,000 out of the reverse mortgage and you lived for another 20 years, and that amount you owed on the reverse mortgage grew to $1.3 million, but the house was only worth $400,000. Your kids still have the right to buy that home when you die at $380,000, right? The rest of that balance gets wiped off. Not to mention that they also get to keep anything you bought with the money, including another house, right? That's a force multiplier. It increases the amount of options you have while simultaneously not increasing your risk at all. It also gives you more access to capital. If you could do that and you had a paid off house, why wouldn't you? You don't have to touch it if you don't need it, but it's there. Who couldn't use a guaranteed, extra $400,000 or $500,000 that's sitting there in the wings in case you need it? Or in case a really great opportunity comes along. Right? So shop philosophy. And why shouldn't you shop performance? I'm going to give you some examples of that. I had a client, a guy I really liked, by the way, very nice guy. Started with us in, I want to say about the end of 2018. It was like fourth quarter of 2018. And he was all into the value portfolio. He's a value guy. And so he had a little bit in the momentum portfolio, but primarily he was concentrated in our value portfolio. And remember, I told you in 2019, I mean, just go pull up value indexes. Be careful which ones you're looking at, because some call themselves value indexes and you look in them, they got a bunch of tech in them. So you got to be careful but if you look at the real value indexes out there, you'll see that 2019 was a great year for stocks. Stock market was up 30%. Value got smoked. Now, we beat virtually every value index out there, but it wasn't saying a lot. Right? I think we were up like 10% that year. And we made the majority of that 10%. I want to say we were only up like 3 or 4% as of September. Anyway, this client calls me in September. He'd only been with us for about 10, 11 months at this period of time. And he said he was thinking about leaving. I told him, you've only been with us 11 months. And he goes, yeah, but this just isn't performing well enough. And I said, but it's been 11 months. And I said, also, you didn't want to be in the momentum portfolio. That's the one that's lighting it up this year. That's why I wanted you to be in the momentum portfolio too. And so I think I've talked him off the ledge. About a week and a half later, we get a transfer assets gone. He's gone. Now, right out of the gate, from the day he left, which was late September, to the end of 2019, the portfolio he was up went up. I mean, and it was unfortunate for him, but it went up immediately like 8 or 9% over the rest of the year. So the year ended up being a lot better. But more importantly, just 2 months into the next year in 2020 is when COVID hit. Long story short, had he stayed with us for an extra 5 months, he would have gone from underperforming the S&P by about 15% from the time he was with us to outperforming by about 18% in just the next 5 months. But what did he do? He was performance shopping. He thought he was philosophy shopping, but he was performance shopping because he wasn't married to the philosophy. He didn't trust the philosophy, so he bailed at precisely the wrong time. And that's why you have to focus on philosophy. I mean, he signed up with a guy talking about risk management and dropped him 11 months later because he'd underperformed the S&P for 11 months. That means nothing. And there's so many examples. We could run the same scenario from 2006, 2007, right? End of 2006. Now, I'm not saying this happened, but let's roll it out. End of 2006, you hire a guy like me who's talking about risk management and the impending real estate collapse. Okay, market rallies 8, 9%, 10% in the first half of 2007. He's only up one. By September of 2007, you go, geez, I picked the wrong guy. I've been with him 11 months. I'm already underperforming the S&P by 8, 9, 10%. Then you get into 2008 and all hell started breaking loose. Now, I don't want to get off the rails here. But that risk management strategy, we were still operating similarly back then, and we actually made money during 08-09. From the end of 2007 till the market bottom in 2009, we were up. The portfolio I was running was up, and it was much smaller back then. But it was up. And so had he left me in 2007, right? Think of it would have been a catastrophic difference. But my point is, risk management works, okay? It's an essential part of every investment philosophy. If you want to be a great investor, you have to do it. It's part of it. It's not the sexy part. It's not the part, especially at the tops of the longest bull markets in history. Nobody's interested. They want to talk about the next short squeeze with AMC. They're looking for the next GameStop. And what happens all too often is people hear the messages of guys like me, you know, real risk managers talking about that, and you know, the left or right brain part of them like identifies with that, but in their hearts, they don't really trust the decision they made, and they're really a performance chaser. And so when the performance goes sideways, they're going to bail. And when you do that, especially if you pick somebody like us, who's active managers who are looking to mitigate risk, you're undoing the very advantages we bring, right? Had that guy stuck with us another 5 months, he'd have been thrilled at his choice. He'd outperformed the S&P by about 20% since he'd been with us. The risk management would have worked. Moreover, he would have been, right? He'd have been dyed in the wool at that point. He never would have left us. And this particular guy in particular, if I'm thinking about it correctly, it would have equated to about another 250 grand too, had he not left then. So shop philosophy. Make sure they're competent. Make sure they know what they're doing. Obviously, I think we fit that bill. So I think you should give us a call at 866-779-RISK. But even if it's not us, right, make sure the philosophies marry up. And also make sure that you're dealing with somebody who understands the concept, maybe not the term, but the concept of force multipliers. Make sure that the person you're paying a fee to manage your money is relentlessly looking for new ways to deliver force multipliers. Make sure that the person managing your money is uncovering and turning over every single bloody rock out there, trying to make your investment scenario better, trying to make your outlook better, trying to make your financial life better. And if they're not, they don't deserve the bloody fee. If their answer is just to write it out, what are you paying them for? Come on, people. There's a better way to do it. So call us, 866-779-RISK, again, 866-779-RISK. I think I've finally summed it up. I think I got to everything. Let's see, did we get... Or the other concept, too, I want to tell you this. When we talk about no catastrophic losses and rising, and this goes right into the conversation I was just having about that last client. Look, whatever you're doing at any given time, you're embracing risk whether you know it or not. You're either embracing risk that could lose you money or you're embracing risk that could cost you money, okay? When we go into retirement, like I think with everything else in life, and this is why we call it the Hippocratic Oath of Finance, the first thing I believe that we should do, and I think we've got tons of data that bears this out, the first thing that I think should happen in that process is that we should identify the things that will ruin your retirement. We need to identify the threats. What are the biggest threats to living the retirement you want to live? Okay? then, in my opinion, the first step should be to take those threats off the table. Now, we also have to understand that when we're doing that, we're embracing a different kind of risk. We're embracing the kind of risk that means that we very well could and probably will at some point not make as much money as we would if we were embracing risk of catastrophic loss. Right? You're embracing one or the other. And when it comes to retirement, to me, it's not even a question. Right? We're going to embrace the risk of total catastrophic loss because we think it could make you more money. We're going to risk your entire retirement portfolio because we think we can make your retirement better at the margins. Think about that. That doesn't make any sense. Whereas we sit there and go, hey, we're never going to risk your entire retirement, ever. But the risk you run with us is you could make a little money somewhere, a little more money doing something else. When it comes to the way we manage money, especially for our older and retired clients, that's not even a question. Does that mean we'll lose some performance chasers every once in a while? Yes. But it also means that I won't ever have to sit there and look across my desk at somebody who just lost half their net worth because I wasn't managing risk. And that I have something other than just sit tight, you got to ride it out. I've got something other than that to tell them. Right? I can look at them and say, yes, the stock market just crashed by 60%, but no, you do not need to sell a car, and no, you do not need to cancel your trip to Italy. We don't get another chance to do this. Embrace the right risks. And know that that is even harder at periods of times like this when you watch a bunch of idiots making a lot of money. Okay, but you know how this game ends. You know. Take the disciplined route. Take the road less traveled. Marry philosophy. Don't marry performance. Make sure there's competency, but don't marry performance. Marry philosophy, because that's what lasts. That's what endures. And find somebody that's earning a fee, for crying out loud. Don't let them charge you rent on your money, which is effectively what's happening to so many of you. And also make sure, if you're getting that fee, that they're not just managing your money, that they're relentlessly looking for ways to give you force multipliers. Anyway, that's about it, guys. I made it through the whole list. Thank you for sticking here with us in the extra session. Hope you guys have a wonderful week. We will be back next week, again, with a guy I refer to as our Viceroy of Value, Mr. Toby Carlisle, to discuss the historic valuations. I think it's only fitting that we visit that. It is historic, after all. And keep an eye out on things. Also, I don't think we're out of this volatility. Everybody's all fired up because we've had this big bounce back over the last couple days. We're right back to those levels. But remember I said that 5361 level, we rallied up to 5358 and we stalled out on the S&P. So we're not out of the woods yet. We're going to see what happens in the next week. I don't think it'll tell us a lot. Anyway, stay tuned. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back next week. You're listening to the Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.